Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 202, Life in Kodachrome. Read by Alan Hare. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere in some time, a photo might be more than an image of some past event. Leopold leaned back from his workbench, took off his glasses, and cleaned them on his shirt tail. There was a time when he didn't need the glasses to do fine work. There was also a time when things could be fixed. Everything these days seemed to be single use, designed so it couldn't be repaired by people like him. He used to be able to fix anything that came through the door to his shop. Now, it was all glued together plastic and microchips with no screws and no replaceable parts. There were few things left he could repair, and even fewer customers who wanted their broken stuff brought back to life, rather than replacing it with the latest model and newest features. To occupy his time, Leopold had taken to roaming the back lanes of his neighborhood, which was slowly being rebuilt, one modern mini-castle at a time. Old trees and wartime strawberry box bungalows were being plowed under to be replaced with three-story plastic-sided cubic monsters with luxury SUVs parked out front. Leopold sifted through the garbage for things he could repair and put into his store, where the all-too-occasional customer bought them for their retro looks rather than functionality. He wondered if the old straight-tray slide projector he was cleaning up would just end up sitting on a shelf in one of the new mini-castles, repurposed as a 1950s artifact to complete somebody's interior decor. Leopold let the thought decay and focused on the work. He had found the projector in the garbage behind one of the wartime houses as it was being readied for demolition. The vintage device had been left behind by the aging owner when she was forced, for her own good, by city health officials, to move to an assisted living complex. He assumed it had been thrown in the roll-off bin by one of the demolition workers. It made Leopold wonder how many years he had before he found himself in the same situation. So he promised himself the only way he was going to leave his home was on a stretcher after his heart had stopped beating. The storefront had been owned by his immigrant parents and operated as a corner grocery for 40 years. By the time Leopold had taken it over, the big box stores had forced most small merchants out of business. Originally, he had converted the storefront, with its second-floor apartment, into Leopold's fix-it. Then, with the rise of unrepairable devices in the last few years, he'd been forced to change it again, this time into a store for his resurrected appliances and electronics. However, instinctively he knew he wasn't far behind the slide projector's former owner. Ultimately, his aging flesh would become as non-repairable as everything else these days. The projector was in mint condition. It had probably been used only once or twice a year to show slides of family vacations. It really only needed to be cleaned up. Even its bulb was still good. However, there had been a single slide jammed in the changer mechanism. Rather than destroying it, Leopold had opted to disassemble the projector. The procedure had given him the opportunity to scrutinize how the thing worked and lubricate its moving parts. The act of disassembly reaffirmed his preference for the physical. Over the past few decades, everything in the world seemed to have gone digital at an accelerating, mind-numbing pace. Even photography had finally succumbed to the tsunami of ones and zeros. As far as Leopold knew, no one continued to manufacture film, and no one used slide projectors anymore. So he guessed most of the infrequent shoppers in his store wouldn't even know what one was. Some days, Leopold caught himself thinking he'd eventually be mistaken for one of his obsolete salvaged appliances, bought and put on display as a curious pre-digital conversation piece. When photography had first been invented, he mused, people believed the action of light on a photosensitive chemical surface was something magical, an immutable agreement between nature and science, which was beyond human intervention. The resulting images literally fixed the light of a fleeting moment in silver haloid crystals forever. He remembered reading someplace how people believe cameras were stealing a piece of their immortal soul to form a picture. Recently, he had come across an article written by a paranormal researcher who was convinced cameras worked by snatching all the lights from its subject, including parts of a person's aura, which explained why frequently photographed celebrities ended up living empty, directionless lives. Leopold didn't believe cameras stole parts of a person's soul, but was convinced when he held a real photo in his hand, he was holding a physical trace of the past. On the other hand, he believed the new photography, derived by machines from abstract and visible patterns of ones and zeros, was fundamentally different. A digital image was not an artifact. Instead, it was an approximation of what had been in front of the lens, mediated by machines, transcoded by software, then altered to wipe away the blemishes of life. The actual photons which the image was based on never touched the final product. So as far as Leopold was concerned, a digital photo was something like an illustration, with all the potential for inaccuracies and bias that implied. This was the reason, in his opinion, why there seemed to be so much trouble these days distinguishing fact from fiction. Leopold picked up a pair of tweezers from his tool tray, carefully closed them around the protruding side of the yellowed cardboard frame of the stubborn slide, then pulled. At first, it refused to budge, making him briefly consider cutting it apart. He changed the position of the tweezers, then tried again. This time, the slide reluctantly agreed to be removed and suddenly popped out, flying across Leopold's workbench, coming to rest near a soldering iron. He quickly poked it away from the hot tip and placed it on a foam pad near the air compressor. He'd clean it with a blast of air later. Leopold turned his attention back to the empty slot where the slide had jammed, noticed the metal was bent, which was why the slide had been stuck, straightened the offending piece with his needle-nose pliers, tested the mechanism, then began to reassemble the projector. It was late in the evening when the job was finally completed. He was about to quit for the night when he noticed the slide. It was lying beside the tray, ready to be put back into the projector. He swore he had left it on a foam pad near the air gun. Despite his age, Leopold's mind was a steel trap. He didn't forget things. A bit concerned, he picked up the slide to examine it. One side of the cardboard frame bore the words Kodachrome Transparency. On the other, the date and name of the film lab were stamped. The ink had been smudged, making it difficult to read. Leopold put the slide under his work lamp and angled it until he could make out the words. Tempest Labs, October 4, 1957, he muttered to himself. His attention turned back to the image, fixed on the film. It was dark, making him wonder at first if the film had aged badly, obliterating the image. He held it up to his work lamp and could make out a figure illuminated against a dark background. The photographer had used a flash, he concluded. He found himself wondering about the person, probably a long-dead relative or friend of the slide projector's original owner. Who were they? What had their life been like? Sudden interest pushed his weariness aside, and Leopold found himself rummaging in his storage room for a projection screen he saved from the landfill a few weeks back, which he hadn't had time to refurbish yet. At first, its mechanical joints resented being pressed into service. But with some WD-40 and Leopold's persistent but gentle encouragement, the stand finally unfolded, and a screen popped up. Leopold quickly set the projector up, then twisted the power knob until it confidently clicked. The bulb lit up, and the rhythmic clanking of a fan started. Next, he adjusted the projector's position until its bright beam filled the screen. With growing excitement, he slotted the slide into the metal receptacle on the side of the machine behind the lens, then gently pushed the handle. The glaring white light was immediately replaced by a dark blue-green fuzz. Leopold twisted the ring at the end of the lens tube until it resolved into a middle-aged man standing beside a late 1950s Cadillac, holding the driver's side door open. The man was wearing a black suit, a brown trilby hat, and a blue shirt open at the collar, revealing a white undergarment. It was dusk, and the flash had obscured everything beyond a small circle of light. In the shadows, Leopold could barely make out the silhouettes of leafless trees, a country road, and the blurry edge of something else. There was too little of it to know what it was. The fuzzy fragment at the top right-hand corner might have been part of a machine or a frame of a door. Had the picture been taken from the open door of another car? The man's head was turned, but his eyes accusingly stared into the lens. His smile was forced, suggesting he didn't really want his picture to be taken. Leopold was immediately drawn in. Who was this man? Why was he photographed at dusk on a lonely country road? And who was the photographer? Maybe it was the projector losing its focus as it heated up, or maybe his tired eyes were just playing tricks on him. But the man in the slide suddenly appeared to move toward the camera. Suddenly, he was at the boundary between the surface of the film and Leopold. Then, without warning, the man was standing beside him. Leopold jumped back in surprise.
How'd you...
he began to ask, then changed his mind.
No, I'm just imagining...
Hey, you're not hallucinating, pal. Thank you for getting me out of that thing. The man in the suit and Trilby gestured toward the slide projection. He was standing so close, Leopold was almost overwhelmed by the smell of aqua velva and stale cigarettes.
You're real,
Leopold questioned, trying to process what had just happened. He backed up against his workbench for support. The man was maybe 35 years old, and although a head shorter and a bit on the stout side, still managed to intimidate him.
Of course I'm real. I've been trapped in that crummy moment for...
Hey, pal, what day is it? The man's eyes darted wildly around the workshop until they settled on a calendar tacked to the wall behind Leopold's workbench.
What? It's been decades.
The man was suddenly angry.
They lied. It was going to be until the film was developed and some other poor sap was curious enough to look at it.
It needs a soul, you know. That's what they said. There always needs to be at least one person in the frame.
I don't understand.
Leopold questioned, trying to edge down the bench away from the unwelcome apparition.
Can't you feel it? It's reaching out, trying to draw you in.
The man moved closer. Leopold shook his head.
It needs someone, and it's not going to be me this time. Hey, you're old. You've had a chance to live your life. Me? Look at me. I wasn't even halfway through mine. It's not fair. I'm not going back, but it still needs someone.
Leopold could see the solution forming in the man's crazed mind. He tried to duck under his arm when the lunge finally came. Maybe when he had been 20 years younger, he could have dodged. However, his joints and muscles took too long to come to life. As he felt himself being roughly grabbed by one sleeve, then pushed into the projector beam, Leopold felt strangely calm.
Okay, there. You've got somebody else now. Now leave me alone, the man yelled.
In the slide, Leopold was lying on the ground beside the caddy. The man quickly removed the slide from the projector, found a pair of scissors on the bench, and cut the transparency into tiny pieces.
Ha ha, it's gone. That's it. I'm free.
But his revelry was short-lived. There was a flash, and the projector's mechanism clicked on its own, revealing a new slide on the old shabby screen. Realizing what was about to happen, the man in the suit tried to step back, but an image of the workshop without its owner spilled out of the projector. The floor seemed to tilt, and the man started to slide into the already fading Kodachrome. Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To listen to other great APN podcasts, such as Mess Hall Podcast, where hosts Avery and Lena Cochran, and sometimes guests, sample, rate, and talk about fun foods, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by the Calgary Foundation. Whether it's funding anti-racism programs, addiction recovery, or food hampers for the hungry, for 65 years, the Calgary Foundation has proudly supported the charitable community to address some of Calgary's biggest challenges. Now, during this period of unprecedented urgent needs, Calgary Foundation renewed its commitment to building a healthy, vibrant, giving, caring, and resilient community. If you're a registered charity looking for a grant, a professional advisor creating a giving plan for your client, or a donor wanting to give back to the community, discover a wealth of resources at calgaryfoundation.org and learn more about their work through Calgary Foundation's Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. This episode is also brought to you by TELUS StoryHive. Are you one of those "I really want to start a podcast" people? Well, we've got a huge opportunity to share with you. Our friends at StoryHive are giving away 10 grants of $10,000 each to aspiring podcasters in BC and Alberta. Since 2013, TELUS StoryHive has funded and supported emerging creators with mentorship and guidance from the National Screen Institute, bringing hundreds of creative Western Canadian projects to life. This time, they're taking to the airways with their inaugural podcast edition, dropping on November 4th. They're looking for original nonfiction podcast concept pitches from BC and Alberta residents. Apply before December 2nd at storyhive.com and you can get $10,000 to get your podcast off the ground. That's storyhive.com for all the details. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month, around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written and read by Alan V. Hare. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David Hume. To find out more about David, head over to davidhume.me. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcast services. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.